Thank you so much. That was wonderful. I'm going to come down after they get through. Brother Spencer has told me several times that he thinks that I ought to go over the foundation stones of Ambassador every year. I hesitate to do that because I would rather do it every other year. So this, I think it has been 2 years since I've done this, so I'm going to get down there. And for the benefit of you visitors, this is not a normal chapel. We major on preaching in chapel. But I think that many of the new students and probably the sophomores have no idea how this school came about, and I think you ought to know that. So I'm coming down. In Exodus, in Ezra 6 and verse 3, God said, "Let the foundations thereof be strongly laid," when talking about the temple. And then in Psalm 11 and verse 3, he said, "If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do?" Paul said it in 1 Corinthians 3:11, "For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ." And that's what this school has been built upon. Let me give you a little bit of the history. In the early 70s, some of my friends and I began to talk about a school like Ambassador Baptist College. And we said, wouldn't it be wonderful if there were a school that was just for the purpose of training young men to preach and young ladies to be preachers' wives? And we talked about that for several years. And I had been accused when I started laying the foundation for Ambassador of saying no other schools were producing preachers. I never said that. What I said was that there was not one school that I knew of whose sole intention was producing preachers and preachers' wives. And so I was hoping somebody else would do it. I was reading just a couple weeks ago in my devotions about Adonijah when David was dying. And by the way, this kind of shook me up. David was 70 when he was dying. And Brother Childs, it says that he was old and well stricken in years. 70. I'm 68. And so I guess I'm getting to that place where I'm old and well stricken in years. But anyway, Adonijah aspired to be king. Absalom aspired to be king. Both of them wound up in disaster. Solomon did not aspire to be king. God appointed him to be king. My next article in the Ambassador is going to be on aspiration or appointment. You see, everybody in the Bible that God exalted in a place of leadership never aspired to that place of leadership. You remember Moses said, "Lord, I can't talk plain." And so God exalted Moses in spite of his inability. He came to Jeremiah and he said, "I've called you to be a prophet to the nations." And Jeremiah said, "Lord, I'm just a child." So God exalted Jeremiah in spite of his immaturity. And then I think about Daniel. It's interesting. Daniel chapter 6 and verse 23 says, "So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian." At least four times Daniel was exalted to be prime minister of Babylon. He had no aspirations of that. His attitude was, "I don't care whether I'm popular or not, I'm going to serve God." And so God exalted him because of his integrity. And I want you fellas to know that you don't aspire to a position. That's why I tell churches, don't ever go from a bunch of resumes and get your pastor. Those are people who are aspiring. You go to somebody who is perfectly content where God has placed him. He's doing a job and God reaches down and he prepares him for your local church. I had no aspirations about being a college president. Not one bone in my little body wanted to be a college president. And so we talked about that for years, and I was still hoping somebody else would do it. Well, I remember the burden became inescapable to me. And by the way, I tell you all the time, that's the difference between a burden and a calling. A burden is temporary, a calling is permanent. You can't get away from it. And that's the way it got to me. And Brother Cummins, I remember that I was in Germany in June of 1986. And I realized that this was more than a burden to me, it was a calling. And so I came back and I started talking with various men. I had some time with Dr. Lee Robertson, talking to him about my burden. In October of 1986, I was in Sellersville, Pennsylvania, and I couldn't get away from it. I'd go to bed with it at night. I'd be awakened in the middle of the night. I'd get up with it in the morning. It'd be on my mind all day long. And I said, Lord, I don't have the brains. I don't have the ability, but I know what you want me to do, and your biddings are your enablings. So I surrendered in October of 1986 to start Ambassador Baptist College. For 2 years, I went across America speaking to groups of preachers, telling them about my burden, my philosophy, and my direction. As a matter of fact, I called 12 college presidents. I have tried to be ethical throughout my entire ministry. I called 12 college presidents, and I told them what my burden was. And I said, I'm not starting Ambassador out of a reaction, but I'm starting Ambassador to fulfill a burden that's been inescapable to me. 10 of those 12 college presidents were very kind and gracious and helpful, and they said they would do anything they could to help me implement my burden. 2 of them were very negative. 1 of them was adamantly opposed to it. And I experienced that opposition from this one college president for a number of years. But I remember in 1987, I called about 28 preachers and a couple educators together in Nashville, Tennessee, right after Christmas time, and I announced that I was going to start Ambassador Baptist College. And so for 2 years, I would go across the country speaking to preachers' groups, not knowing exactly what I was doing and where I was going. I had no idea where we were going to locate the school. I tried several places. Here again, God opened and closed doors. My wife and I were living in a log house that we had always wanted to build in Nashville, Tennessee, really Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And I was naive enough to think that maybe God would let me start Ambassador in Nashville so we could commute back and forth from our log house. God closed that door in Nashville. And then we thought about Indianapolis, Indiana, the center of the country, and God closed that door. We thought about Atlanta, Georgia, and God closed that door very vividly. And then Tom Farrell called me up one day on the phone, and he said, Brother Comfort, he said, do you know that there's a campus in Asheville that would be perfect for Ambassador Baptist College, Ben Lippin? And 128 acres, 28 buildings, and they wanted $2.1 million for it. It was a prep school for Columbia Bible College. And so we pursued that. I called my board together. We came to Ben Lippin, and they were all enthused about it, and we tried to get financing for it. We put $10,000 down of earnest money, and right now Columbia Bible College has $10,000 of Ambassador Baptist College money. But you know, it was the grace of God that closed that door in Ben Lippin. There is no way with 37 students that we could have maintained 128 acres and 28 buildings with 37 students. No way in the world. We would have been out of existence today. And I'll tell you another thing. You see, in Asheville, North Carolina, Billy Graham is a god. And if we had had to take a stand against Billy Graham, it would have turned the entire community against us. So God in His wisdom put us here in Shelby. Now, some of you new students don't know this, but I had a man on my board who owned the building that we rented for 7.5 years in Shelby. And he said, now, I don't want to impose anything upon you, but I would like for you, Brother Comfort, to go there and look at it and tell me what you think. And if you have a desire to start Ambassador there, I'd be glad to rent it to you for a nominal fee, which, by the way, wasn't a nominal fee. But anyway, Jim Phillips, who was pastor at Bible Baptist Church in Matthews, and I went, and we looked at it, and I said, Jim, it's a nice building, it's a nice property, but I ain't going to build a college in Shelby. It's a hick town. Now, don't you dare let that get out of this auditorium today. If you do, I'll say you lied about it. But anyway, and you know, I thought about that, young people. If he had brought me to Lattimore, and I would have seen Lattimore before Shelby, I'd have said, ain't no way. But anyway, in the course of time, we did start at that other property. And I'll tell you, that was of the Lord. I did not want to start the college there. As a matter of fact, I was out in Yuma, Arizona. And the president of my board called me, or vice president, and he said, Brother Comfort, why don't you come and look at the property in Shelby once again? I said, there's no reason to. I said, we're not building a college in Shelby. He said, well, I'll tell you what. The board will pay your way if you'll just come and look at it and pray about it. And I said, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. I said, there's no reason to. I said, I'm in a meeting here in Yuma, Arizona, and I've got another day. And they said, well, would you just consider it? Before the day was over, I decided I better come and at least give God an opportunity to talk to my heart. My son-in-law, Mike Pelletier, was with me in that meeting, so we closed the meeting in Yuma, and I flew to Shelby. And young people, I cannot tell you the change that took place in my heart after being at the other campus for one day. When I went here, I was angry. When I went to the airport to fly back, I said, Lord, I surrender. If you want us to start the college in Shelby, we will start the college in Shelby. I had preached in Christian colleges for 20 years, and I don't want anything that I say today to be interpreted as criticizing other colleges. Now, I made up my mind to this a long time ago. I know what God called me to do, but I don't know what God's called other people to do. See, and whatever they want to do at their colleges, that's between them and the Lord. And we have a policy here that we do not criticize other Christian colleges that are fundamental in the classroom. We just don't do that. But I had seen things that I felt needed to be incorporated in a preacher's training school. And so it's like you take a baby and you formulate the character into that baby. The parent has a tremendous opportunity and responsibility of formulating the proper character into that baby. And so I have that same feeling about Ambassador. My first priority was to be a Bible-saturated institution. Do you know that when Moody Bible Institute was founded, they required their students to have 96 hours of Bible? There is not another college that I know of in the entire world that requires their students to have 96 hours of Bible. But through the years, the more liberal arts oriented we become, the less Bible that we've required. By the way, do you know that 88 out of the first 100 colleges in America were started for the same reason Ambassador Baptist College has been started? What happened? I believe there was a pattern. They got a few students in and they said, well, we've got to generate some income, so we've got to broaden our curriculum so it will attract more students. We have never done that, young people. 2 years ago at our staff and faculty retreat, we showed our original video, which was laughable. It was terrible. But the thing that I really appreciated about that, if you saw the original video that we made 18 years ago, we haven't changed one bit. And by God's grace, we're not going to change. If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? Now, I had preached the King James Bible through the years, and I had seen the power of God upon it, and so I wanted an institution that would be true to it. Now, the faculty members take an academic view of the King James. I take the academic view, but I major on the practical aspect of it. The power of God's been on this book for almost 400 years. Why in the world should we jeopardize the power of God by changing? I don't believe that makes good sense. So I wanted an institution that would be a Bible-saturated institution. I tell young people this, if you are looking for a college to train for the ministry, what is the most important thing? Bible. And you know, that escapes the minds of the average young person who's looking for a college. He looks for all the extracurricular activities and the buildings and the pomp and the splendor, but he doesn't think, where can I get the most Bible? And so we made it a policy from day one that if you graduate as a male student, you have to have 65 to 66 hours of Bible. If you graduate as a young lady, you have to have 60 hours of Bible. So when a person graduates from Ambassador, they can say, I've been from Genesis through Revelation in the classroom. I look at our curriculum and I envy you students. You see, you have an entire semester on some courses that I spent a week on in Bible doctrines class. I had a missionary couple in my office, and Brother Johnson was coming by my office, and I said, wait a minute, folks, I want you to meet our missions director. And so Brother Johnson came in. This couple was wanting to come to train for the missions. And Brother Johnson said something that I never really put together, but it's the truth. He said that when Dr. Bob Jones Sr. started Bob Jones University, what he did, he started a school that he wanted to be an alternative to the public college. He had seen so many young people go to public colleges and get their faith robbed. And so he wanted a Christian liberal arts institution that would be an alternative, that wouldn't rob the faith of the young people. Now, young people, don't ever make the mistake of calling a liberal arts college a Bible college. It is not a Bible college. It is a liberal arts college. And Brother Johnson went on to assess this. He said every college that he knows of that has been started since Bob Jones University started in the mold of what Bob Jones was. A Christian liberal arts college. Now, they may call themselves, in many instances, a Bible college, but they are not a strict Bible college. Any college that has biological science survey, history of sieve, philosophy, ancient medieval philosophy, that's not a Bible college, folks. That's a liberal arts college. And so he said that when Brother Comfort started Ambassador, he did not start it in the mold of Bob Jones University. He started it in the mold of what Moody Bible Institute used to be. And that's the truth. Just a strict Bible college. And that's all we ever aspire to be. Now, Eddie, if you ever see that Ambassador Baptist College has moved from its moorings, it's your responsibility as an alumnus to write the president of this institution and say, listen, that is not the Ambassador Baptist College that I graduated from. I want in 25 years, if Jesus tarries, for Eddie Hawks to be able to say, it's just like it was when I graduated. Well, I wanted a strong local church emphasis. By the way, one of the main things that we are criticized for is that we are not a local church institution. Now, there's a Hebrew word to describe that. Baloney. Baloney. We do things here in respect to the local church that many of these local church colleges do not do. For instance, we would not have a graduation on a Sunday night and take people from all over the country out of their local churches to come and be at Ambassador Baptist College on a Sunday night. There is only one exception in the entire year where we violate that, and that is in our landmark meeting we have Camp Barnabas. And we have kids from 12 or 13 states, and there's no way that we could have them in the local churches in the area. That is the only night during the entire year that we have a service here where when a local church on either Sunday or Wednesday has a service. Now, one of the things that I wanted in a location was a place where there were a lot of independent Baptist churches. Do you know that in a 50-mile radius, there are no less than 200 independent Baptist churches? And here, you see, if you were in, quote-unquote, a local church college, you would do one thing. You would work on the bus ministry. And Brother Spencer can verify that. If you're not working on the bus ministry, there's nothing for you to do in the local church. And here at Ambassador, you can be a youth director, you can be a Sunday school teacher, you can participate in a jail ministry, and there are many facets that train you for a local church ministry. And then thirdly, I wanted a strong soul-winning emphasis. When I was a student in the 50s at Bob Jones University, even the business majors were out on extension winning people to Christ. The business majors were out on the street preaching. And I wanted that same mentality to permeate our student body. And I'll tell you what, young people, if you're not a soul winner here, you're not going to be a soul winner out in the ministry. So you're not going to be something tomorrow that you're not today. And then I wanted a family atmosphere. Everything we do here is with a philosophy. Do you know why your faculty eats with you in the dining common? Because I want you to know that in this school we have no superiors, no inferiors, we only have equals. We're just sinners saved by the grace of God. Now please excuse me for this, but I get very uncomfortable when a preacher gets in this pulpit and he starts bragging about Ron Comfort. I don't need that. I don't need that. And I am embarrassed by it. I could tell you of schools today where a chapel speaker goes to speak and they give him a letter and they say something kind or complimentary about the president. I have thought that we need to put in the preparation material, don't say anything about the president. You see, there are no big shots in this school. We're sinners saved by grace. I remember the first time I met Sheldon Smith. I preached in a South Carolina Baptist Fellowship meeting with him. And Sheldon was sitting across the table from me. And I said, Sheldon, let me bear my heart with you. I said, we don't have the sword of the Lord on our campus. We don't even have it in our library. And I said, I'm going to tell you why. I said, I don't want our students to get caught up in a man-centered philosophy. And I said, through the years, the sword of the Lord has promoted a man-centered philosophy. Sheldon Smith said this, and right away it gave us a kindred spirit. He said, Brother Comfort, I'm trying to get away from that. And if you see that in the sword of the Lord, you please let me know, because I don't want that to be predominant in the sword of the Lord. This is not a man-centered institution, young people. And you have heard me say, and will hear me say until you're tired of it, don't ever call this Ron Comfort School. It is not Ron Comfort School. If it were Ron Comfort School, the doors would have been closed a long time ago. And I tell people this, every day those doors remain open. We have to depend on God to keep them open, because a man couldn't do this. And then I saw this so evident. As I had preached in Christian colleges, I saw a pattern that they would take a young man who was a good student, had a good personality, and they would take him through the bachelor's program and through the master's program and then put him right back in the classroom to teach theory. Now, you think about this. Doctors are not trained by people who have never practiced medicine. They're trained by people who have practiced medicine. By the way, that's what a lot of them do. They practice it. Mechanics. You don't want to learn from a man who has just read about mechanics from a manual. You want to learn from a man who has done mechanical work. And so I made up my mind that we would have nobody as a full-time faculty member that had never been experienced in the ministry. When our faculty came to us, they had an average tenure of 28 years in the ministry. When I was starting Brother Johnson the school, I had a fellow who was helping me lay the groundwork. And we were talking about, we need a missions teacher. He said, well, Brother Comfort, I could teach missions. I said, well, let me ask you a question, Don. Have you ever been a missionary? He said, no. I said, have you spent extensive time on mission fields around the world? He said, no. I said, if I let you be ahead of our missions department, I said it would ruin one of our policies. We will not have a person in an area of teaching where he has not been experienced in that area. And that's true of every one of our faculty members. You see, most of these goofy theories we get from career academicians. You don't get Calvinism from pastors who have been in the ministry for 25 years and dealt with people in the pews. You get Calvinism from some career academician who sits in his ivory tower making up all these goofy theories. Well, we're not going to have that at Ambassador. And every teacher that you have at Ambassador is experienced in the area that he is teaching. And then I wanted classes to be practical. Dr. Bob Jones Sr. used to say this, you can borrow brains, but you can't borrow character. And through the years, I have realized that I need to borrow brains in a lot of areas because there are very few areas where I am have an expertise in. And so I have borrowed brains in a lot of areas. Ron White, when he was here, alluded to the fact that we were in Osaka at Kansai Baptist Bible College. And I saw that they required all of their young ladies to take 2 years of piano. I said, boy, that's practical. That's a lot better than dissecting a frog in biological science survey. See? And then they required their girls to have sign language for the deaf. And I thought, that's a whole lot better than philosophy. And so everything we do in this school, we try to do that you can use when you get out in the ministry. I never will forget being with Eddie Hawks the first time. And I was amazed. Eddie Hawks was up leading the singing with his congregation, and then he would lead the choir. And I thought, good night, Eddie. I would have never dreamed you would do that. But he got that here. It's all part of practical training. I like to ask our students this when I'm with them. I like to say, was there any class that you had that did not contribute to your ministry that you felt was a waste of time? And if I were to have 10 people tell me that a certain class was a waste of time, we would eliminate that class. Because everything we have in this school, I want it to be apropos to training you for the ministry that's ahead of you. And then I heard Dr. Bob Sr. say this so many times, that a hot chapel platform was the key to any Christian college. Morris Glaser talks about taking a group of young people in the 1980s to a college. And he said they sat there, the preacher was a visiting speaker, he had a wonderful message, but when he concluded, it was as cold as a refrigerator. The next day he went to another college. Get this, the same preacher preached. He preached the same identical message. And when he concluded the message, the altar was filled. You know why? The difference was a preaching atmosphere. Now, you kids get tired of me talking about coming up toward the front, filling in the vacant spaces. I was in a church just a few weeks ago where I came into Sunday school, and the Sunday school teacher was up here, and the people were sitting halfway back. And I thought, how in the world is he ever going to get across his message by that type of a preaching atmosphere? And you cannot have effective preaching without an effective preaching atmosphere. And there are very few preachers across this country that work at promoting a preaching atmosphere. And I hope you fellas that God is called to preach, when you get out, you will work at creating a preaching atmosphere. I can preach the same message in two churches, and the results will be entirely different. One is a preaching atmosphere, one is not. So we major on a hot chapel platform. Now, I don't know if you know this, but the average Christian college has 35 minutes for chapel and 50 minutes for classes. What is that message of getting across? That the classroom is more important than the chapel. We have an hour chapel. We have 50 minutes of classes. What does that tell you? The chapel is the most important thing that we do. I don't want a faculty member here who doesn't want to be in chapel. You will go to the average Christian college during chapel, and you will see people in all areas in the school working during chapel. We have one person out of chapel. One person. That's the person answering the phones. If a student or a faculty member does not want to be in chapel, we don't want them here, because the chapel is the most important thing we do. And then I wanted a strong missions emphasis. In 1976, God led our team to go to the mission field for the first time. And it transformed our lives. From 1976 until 1988, we spent 6 to 8 years on mission fields around the world at our own expense. And I believe, Brother Johnson, that God was using that to prepare us for Ambassador Baptist College, where a third of our students characteristically would be heading for the mission field. When I talked to Dr. Robertson about Ambassador Baptist College, he said this. He said, you cannot have an effective preacher's college, training college, if you do not have the right kind of music. So we try here not to have music that appeals to the head or that appeals to the foot, but that appeals to the heart. I don't want formalistic music in chapel. I want music in chapel that prepares you for a strong preaching of the Word of God. It is ridiculous to have bad music and good preaching. It won't be long until the message will degenerate to what the music is. And then I wanted a school where we would not have intercollegiate sports. I'll tell you what, if you ever hear that Ambassador is going intercollegiate in their sports program, you can mark it down. It's going down a wrong road. Now, what happens with intercollegiate sports? It starts out very innocently. You say, well, the Bible says bodily exercise profiteth little. So we've got to have some outlet for our students, and we're not going to put any emphasis on our sports program. So the first year in football, you go 0-11. Is that right, Brother Spencer? He was at Pillsbury when they did that. By the way, Maranatha. Maranatha lost a game 100-0? 99-0. They made news all over America. The worst loss in the history of intercollegiate sports. Yeah, that was before your time. I know it was 1-10 after you were there. And then you have a basketball team, 1-18. And you know what the devil says? Hey, this isn't a good testimony. You need to get in some athletes here. And it is not long until the thing is out of perspective altogether. And so you start putting the emphasis on the sports. How many of you fellas played, or girls played sports in high school? Will you raise your hand? That was a very important part of your life, I'm sure. And when many of you came to Ambassador, you thought, man, there won't be anything to do at Ambassador. But we have found that our intramural situation, our interleague situation, fills that void. And it keeps the emphasis where it ought to be. We had one of the camp directors that was here recruiting, and he said, well, I hope someday you'll get a new gym. Said, it ain't going to happen. That's not part of our priorities. That's way down on the list of our priorities. It does meet a need, but we never want to get that thing out of perspective. And then we wanted to have right dress standards. Let me warn you about something. Fellas, listen to me. There was a visitor here that pointed to one of our young men. Are you listening? And he said, that boy dresses like the homosexuals I've seen. When I heard that, that bothered me deeply. Bothered me deeply. And I'll tell you, if I see that in you, I'm going to call you in. Now, I don't think there's anybody in our student body that wants to be identified with the homosexual movement. I don't think there's anybody like that. And if you are leaning toward that type of dress, you're not an ambassador type student. And then, as I get ready to close this thing, I wanted a school that would produce evangelists. You know, in the 1950s and 60s, Tennessee Temple and Bob Jones produced all the evangelists. And I would read Phil Schuler's newsletter, and almost every newsletter he wrote, one day the evangelist is going to be a vanishing dinosaur. There's going to be no longer evangelists. And I believe that without the confrontational voice of the evangelist, according to Ephesians 4, then the church body will not be complete. In order for the church to operate as it ought to, it needs pastors and teachers and evangelists. And so by God's grace, we have put out 23 evangelists who are in full-time evangelism right now. Now, I think that clock says 10 till, doesn't it? Is it 10 till? Okay. I don't have my glasses on. I want to ask you, do you have any questions that you would like to ask me? In these next few moments, we're going to sing How Firm a Foundation in just a moment. But I want to, if you have any questions you would like to ask about the school. By the way, one of the reasons I talk about this, I want you to know that there's a price to be paid if you leave anything beyond your lifetime that is going to be used of God. There's a price to pay. You see, young people, the first 4 years of this school, my wife and I did not receive a penny salary. I went to my wife and I said, honey, what do you think an equitable salary would be as my secretary? You know what she said? She said, darling, if I received a salary, I would be convicted. She said, I'm having so much enjoyment out of this. She said, I don't want any salary for this. And for 4 years, my wife and I did not receive a penny salary. The first year that we started Ambassador, I had 12 of my friends cancel meetings with me because I had started college. And the first year that I was president of Ambassador, my salary was cut to one-third of what it was the previous year. I think about Dr. Childs. He came here going back and forth from Greenville every day for $100 a week. There was a sacrifice involved. And young people, if you do anything that is worthwhile, there will be a sacrifice involved. And I'll tell you something, nobody will sacrifice like the pastor for his church. He will be the main one to sacrifice, and so you better be prepared for that if you do anything that is going to be long-lasting.